Now, Dr. Bird, I understand you are the nephew of a very well-known UFO investigator, yes. Admiral Bird.
Yes.
Could you tell us a bit about him, and then we'll get into your own background?
Well, the Admiral, of course, you know, was involved in UFO activity as early as 1927 when he flew to the North Pole and the South Poles with government funding and backing to investigate these alleged openings at the polar regions. Of course, this is an old, old, old story. It goes back to the Buddhist era when they wrote about the land of the inner earth called Agartha. And at that time, they established the concept of the great opening in the north. And the Eskimo people that live in those regions also know and talk about the great opening in the north. And for the easiest way to understand this openings, there are the openings, is to understand the aurora borealis. And the aurora borealis simply in Webster says mysterious northern lights. Well, these mysterious northern lights have been pulling men to those regions for centuries. Before Admiral Byrd, there was Admiral Peary. Before that, there was a Lieutenant Cook from the British Empire. There were Norwegians. There was a Shackelford from England who sailed up into that region. His ship froze up. But all the time, these men were seeking the source of the aurora borealis. And the aurora borealis, in the most simplest terms, is the outer radiation of an inner central sun inside the nucleus of the Earth. This is very much like the nucleus of an atom. Or in our body, we have the soul. You look at our body anatomically, you cut off your arm, you've got a hollow marrow in your bones. Your skull is empty, in a matter of speaking. Of course, it's full of gray matter. So to answer your question, the Admiral made four major expeditions to the North and South Pole, establishing Little America, all in the name of science and always searching for the ultimate, which he discovered was the inner Earth, where there are UFOs. There are aliens of all shapes, size, and descriptions, including a Sasquatch, the big Yeti that mystifies so many people. So the Admiral spent his entire life searching for these openings, which he found. And as certainly as he found them and went back to the Pentagon in 1957, he was debriefed and told not to share this information with anybody.
Why would that be?
The military has a strange cover story they call national security. In the name of national security, we're unable to share this information with you. It's the same cover story for UFOs. In the name of national security. So if we don't have national security, we have national insecurity,
right.
I guess. And I think the military feels that basic civilian populace at large would be frightened. I think they're really off base because children love E.T., for instance.
Yes,
you know, Universal Studio, they
certainly
just built a $50 million E.T. ride, a $50 million E.T. People come from all over the world to pay homage to this recreated spaceship coming out of the sky, and a little computerized E.T. guy comes out and shakes your hand. All of his life searching out this origin for the openings and found them, and then he was unable to share this message with the world.
Was Admiral Byrd interested in UFOs before he made his initial trips up there, or did that seem to start
something for him?
It was his discovery.
It started
that
something for him, yeah.
Started this.
It was like, I call it the hornet's nest effect, where his entry and his penetration into this inner world, as it were, startled. And in fact, in his log, he indicates that two saucers came on his DC-3 engines, put the engines out, and set his craft down. No, the UFO effect wasn't his major thrust for his expedition. It was to explore and chart uncharted areas. For instance, I don't want to compare him to Columbus, but Columbus, you know, went over to the edge of the earth and was going to sail off.
I was just thinking of Columbus,
He charted this uncharted area, and that's what the Admiral was really basically trying to do, was to chart an uncharted area and to discover once and for all these openings, which he actually discovered on two separate occasions.
Now, was the National Security Agency in place at this time when he came out with this information, or was that formed as a result of
NSA,
an incident like this?
NSA came probably 20 years later,
mm-hmm.
on the heels of the Admiral's discoveries. CIA and FBI were the suppressing agents at that time. So he was working under the MJ-12 umbrella, and as well as NSA was an offshoot of the CIA, which deals with national security problems.
Mm-hmm.
But they're operatives now in the Dulce area, level 7 officers, 6 officers, level 7, level 5, level 4, level 3.
Those are security levels.
Yes, ma'am.
That you're referring to.
Yeah, I have an Ultra 3 level clearance.
And how did you end up with an Ultra 3 level clearance? What exactly does that mean?
That's above top secret, which is a special clearance that's given to you by the Department of Defense on a mm-hmm. need-to-know basis, where if you're entering an area that's restricted, you have a card or a credential, very much like this, that they put into a machine,
yes.
and they key you in and key you out on a computer entry. All your belongings are put out on a conveyor belt, and they're sent through a scan machine mm-hmm. to check for radiation and a lot of other high-level kinds of security checks before you're able to enter into level 3, which I was involved in.
I see.
Which is where they were building the UFOs that you saw in today's presentation. The one,
right.
the one electro-gravity motor device, which is highly sophisticated and is... if I may say so, quite a boon that we have shared this technocracy with the Little Grays. That's why mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier when we were talking before the show that I'm really
yes.
affectionately fond of the Little Gray people. And while there are other people in the military and the higher-ups who see them as a threat,
yes.
with the cattle mutilations, the abductions of Krista Tilly, who I know personally,
mm-hmm.
she's from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I flew out there and talked with her. And when they mess with people and people become frightened,
yes.
then the military will intervene and try and control the situation.
Well, we've run through a lot of information here in the last couple of minutes. Let's step back to where you are actually saying that the United States government has people or groups of people that are assigned to these top secret areas
mm-hmm.
that have been keeping UFO information from the general public.
Sure, sure, we have to.
Who really do have a right to know, I suppose, or a lot of people would think they do, but it has been kept under wraps.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the general public is entirely unaware of these groups operating within
totally in the dark.
Their
sure.
very own government. Doesn't
sure.
that violate the Constitution, though?
Well, it depends on who's interpreting the Constitution. From the MJ-12 point of view, I worked with, they feel if you have a need to know about this information, you'll know.
What that's is the MJ-12 exactly?
The MJ-12 is a group of men that's a code name for Majestic 12.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a movie, Magnificent
it
Seven
does.
Or something. Well, they're a highly responsible group of men in the government. Four-star General Twining headed it up first in 1947 after this first wave of alien crashes happened out mm-hmm. in the White Sands regions, and the presidential powers and the advisors advised them at that time to put together a body of men who could cope with this problem, dissect it, and make recommendations to the White House and the other military people, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is under the MJ-12 in the operative
mm-hmm.
block schedule there of the program, that they would inform the White House as if there were an imminent threat, and to keep regular check basis on this operation out in the desert, and to keep the White House and other interested government officials informed. So for the general populace to cope with this, the military feels, and I know, and I'm not pro-military or anti-military, they just feel that if you're a working civilian at an installation somewhere, and you're working on a top secret plane, you don't really have a need to know about what's going on in the next sector, for instance.
Right. So the secrecy is kept within the government
as well.
It's not just the public.
Compartmentalized.
It's within the government.
It's all compartmentalized.
Well. I think perhaps a lot of people don't understand
the
basic structure of the government
to begin with.
Of
course not.
Perhaps that makes it even easier for them and gives them all the more reason to classify these various levels and keep this information within the government itself.
Now we could get into a go ahead.
We could carry on with government
secrecy. I've been studying the secretive nature of men, and women also are secretive by nature, and it's a survival instinct that dates back to the Neanderthal, really, when two men found that they could make fire by rubbing sticks together. They had big kumbhamela, big magic.
Sure.
So the secret was kept very, very much out of the reaches of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout time, even in Egypt, the Egyptians were the most secretive people in the world. And of course, throughout history, you look at every military, the Moors, for instance, 15th, 16th century, had secret weapons, you see. That was the ultimate, to have a secret weapon, where they get this huge, humongous machine rolls out on wheels and they trip a lever and this huge arm comes up and lobs a big boulder at a castle that's fortified with these guys with these strange pointed hats. They can make clout into this, they can make inroads with this secret weapon. So the secrecy and secret weapons has gone on since...
It's nothing new.
It's nothing new. And the military has to have its secrets, and I think for control, for power, and really they... The military has a pejorative nature instinctively about civilians. It's only the civilian sector, you see.
Yes.
Like, we really don't count, you see. And it gives them a feeling, I think, of superiority or a feeling of that they're better than someone else. And, I don't have a beef against the military. There's a lot of things they do I don't like. But yet, one of the things is keeping us so in the dark for 40, 50 years now about this subject. And it's time that we... bring all of our cards out on the table and say, hey, we're a pretty intelligent group of people.
Yes.
I think we can handle it.
You feel that it's time to declassify some of that information
and
make it available.
Definitely.
Now, you ended up in the Pentagon yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
In what position?
Well, I was first went into the, I'll make this brief, the Navy Honor Guard, but I was selected for the Navy Honor Guard in my initial training, and I got a security clearance. It was my first step, a secret clearance at the Anacostia receiving base, where we received dignitaries and we housed certain people at this base next to the Washington complex for people visiting the president. And so we had to have a secret clearance to be in a position of trust or whatever to take these people around. And then I got a top secret clearance 6 months later, and they asked me if I would like to work in the Pentagon section. And I said, well, sure. In the military, anything is a change is kind of a promotion, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So the next thing I knew, I was working in a security review office, room 4D717, where we declassified information at that time, like secret things on the bullpup missile, which we talked about earlier in the lecture.
Yes.
And the Polaris was a big hot project, that submarine that lobs, you know, these war destructive lobs of nuclear missiles around. And then I got a chance to get a top secret cryptographic clearance. And I was cleared on that after 6 months of investigation. And I was promoted up to the fifth floor in the Joint Chiefs of Staff work areas where the MJ-12 was operating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the key opened to another universe, another world to me, where all this classified material was being held and is still held.
Did you plan to carry on Admiral Byrd's work, or was this in his investigations and follow up more with his theories, or did this just happen that you ended up in this level of the Pentagon and all of a sudden there you were?
Well, it all dovetailed, actually, because when I was a kid, my mother used to talk to Evelyn, the Admiral's wife, about the Admiral flying into the Hollow Earth, and I used to make a joke about it. Well, why doesn't he stay down there? You know, ha 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 ha. And I thought that was kind of disrespectful, because he was a hero figure for me.
Yeah.
And I admired him. I still admire him to a great extent, of course. But to answer your question, I uncovered some documents about his secret flights. That's why my book is titled The Secret Diary of Admiral Byrd.
Mm-hmm.
It was given to me by Marie at his graveside in Arlington. I was a flag bearer. Happened to be at the Ceremonial Honor Guard when
yes.
he died. This is before I got promoted over to the Pentagon. And people ask me a lot if they were showing favoritism because of my name, the family tradition, all that. I don't think
right.
so, because I was just a young kid with good marks, and they knew about Admiral Byrd, and they thought that I would be a good candidate for a top secret cryptographic clearance. And
mm-hmm.
when I got into this nest of unbelievable UFO films, the U Pictures file is just awesome. It's an entire bank of UFO films that the military has received from most people who want to be evaluated, first of all.
Have they been authenticated?
Many of them, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's just it's awesome as to the secretive nature of the military to keep all of this from generally from the public.
Yes,
so the admiral's working with that secret log, I at first felt very disloyal that I would divulge any of this information, because it was a military secret. And if
mm-hmm.
at that time, prior to 1973, if I had divulged any of this information, like I am today, thank God we still have freedom of speech, and the Freedom of Information Act that I mentioned earlier was a
yeah.
significant turning point in the whole complexity of the secretive nature of the military and the government. So it's all coming out slowly.
So you look at it as a positive thing that the government's involved with these extraterrestrials,
positive?
Or alien technology. Would you say positive, or perhaps constructive, as opposed to destructive?
Yeah, it's constructive in a way, because the payoff is these unbelievable anti-gravity machines that they've developed out in the Dulce area, the power pack that I spoke about earlier.
This is Dulce, New Mexico.
Yes, ma'am.
Correct, yes.
They've developed technocracy beyond most the layman's comprehension, actually.
Yes.
Just beyond it would make Tesla just do backflips. Nikola Tesla, you know, the genius
oh, yes.
electronic
mm-hmm.
wizard. He would turn backflips, because actually his power source that he developed is in the alien craft that they have built with us. So there was talk that Tesla was from outer space and possibly an alien entity.
I've heard that of many scientists
and
who claim to have extraterrestrial contact.
Yeah.
In fact, that most
yeah.
of the inventions and the technology, particularly
in
defense systems,
all
related to extraterrestrials,
yes,
which
ma'am.
I'm sure would just stun most people.
Yes, yes, it is stunning.
It's really, it changes everything.
Yes, yes.
When you really take a look at it, and do you happen to accept that fact.
Mm-hmm.
So once you were in the Pentagon, and since then you have discovered various types of aliens and alien activity. You've spoken
mm-hmm.
of the Greys
mm-hmm.
and other types such as the Andromedans.
The big Greys,
and
yeah.
The Pleiadians.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between these groups? What are they doing, and who's the most prominent?
Who's the most prominent? Well, I'd say probably the Gray problem is the most prominent, because they're the Gray leaders, as we call them, are the big Grays, the six-footers.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to, they were on a rescue mission for them, because they were aware of this eradication plan I was speaking of earlier, Excalibur.
The government was planning on rescuing them.
No, the big Grays from Andromeda, the nearby constellation.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like emissaries intervening into a destruction plot that was going on that they knew about and they were observing, and they were really on a rescue mission when we intercepted them and threw them in the holding tanks there in Arlington at a CIA facility.
So they were captured by the military. There
yeah.
was a craft that crash landed.
They weren't military, they were men in black. Yeah,
the men in black. What are the men in black?
Well, the men in black are operatives, government operatives, there are four, actually five levels of men in black. We'll start with the lowest, level mm-hmm. four, which we term in the UFO community as Hollywood, MIBS, for acronym for men in black,
yes.
We'll refer to MIBS. Hollywood MIBS, they dress like men in black, because they have...
All black?
They all black.
Makes sense.
Casual men in black are what we refer to as Hollywood MIBS. Mm-hmm. They come to titillate people who know about men in black. That's the lowest, and they're humorous. And
are these the types we read about in the tabloids?
Yes, exactly. Yes. So then the next level, the 03 men in black, would be an FBI agent operatives. They wear black shoes, black ties, black hats, black shades, and usually have big black wallets that they
and
pull
perhaps
out.
Perhaps they're a little more suspicious looking.
They tape things, usually audially, without your knowledge. And then the next level is a more serious level of NSA, the NSA men in black. They infiltrate, this is as late as 1980, they infiltrated large UFO conferences that I attended in Berkeley with a colleague, Virgil Armstrong, who you've probably heard of.
Yes, I have.
Virgil is a friend and a colleague. I was kind of his friend and gopher coolie type at the mm-hmm. conference because he was a major speaker and I wasn't even public on the subject yet, but we had met in the Pentagon when he was working the early crash retrieval reports, and that was his one of his assignments. So we were getting ready to go on, and two men in black approached us. They took us into the back room, and they started roughing Virgil up. They twisted his arm, put his head against the wall, and told him basically that he was dealing with high security level material, and that what he was doing was against what he was supposed to be doing. And he unruffled himself, and they left, and he went on with the show. And he spoke for about an hour about his work in crash retrieval recovery work, early as 1957, 56, 58, and described the Greys and the ships and all the reporting that he had to do. So
the Greys are actually a gray alien. They're the color gray.
Mm-hmm.
They have.
Mm-hmm.
Have we seen these in movies or in books?
Yeah,
is there
the
any information about
yes, the
available?
Closest the closest that Hollywood's gotten to representing reality was a scene in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Have you seen Close Encounters?
I've seen that a couple of times. Yeah.
The military loves that film and that whole situation because it puts it into a fantasy world when really the film is based on total reality. The Michigan sightings, for instance, in the beginning, when the telephone lineman and he stalls out on the railroad tracks, and the light comes into the cab and everything starts bouncing around, and all of a sudden he looks up and there's this humongous scout ship above
mm-hmm.
him. That actually happened. That was a Michigan sighting. The entire state, I handled that problem. That whole state area was wiped out electronically. It just, the power... They drain all the power.
That seems to be a consistency
yeah,
in a
consistent
lot of UFO
story.
Sightings,
right, right, exactly.
Especially where there's larger ships
right.
or group
right.
sightings. They
right.
do seem to
right.
zap power
right.
stations,
right.
and they seem to like to hang out around nuclear plants
right.
and
right.
Microwave
right.
towers.
Right, electronic lines.
Mm-hmm.
So now, to answer your question without rambling, the aliens that you saw in those scenes coming out of the ship
mm-hmm.
at the finale are as close as we have come in the films to what the Greys are like.
The Greys. And
right.
the pilots they had on board, or the people that were on board that craft that were released, would that somewhat give us an idea of the abduction
mm-hmm.
problem
yes.
that has been occurring, I guess, since the Roswell crash in 1947.
Right. Well, they simplified it, in my opinion.
These gray aliens who have been abducting people, and now how does this go back to Admiral Byrd's discoveries with the Hollow Earth? Are these the same aliens that he was in contact with or that he saw?
No, the people that he encountered, inside, after his flight, were Aryan, blonde Aryans with Germanic, Slavic accents. However, they are believed to be Germanic, remnants of the SS who flew in the inner earth and not in the Adolf Hitler's flying ships, which he had maybe a dozen of. They were highly operative. The Schoenberg craft is an anti-gravity, copper-driven machine at 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 miles an hour, silent and very, very efficient maneuverability. So they feel that he flew into that, was met by the Slavic, Nordic, Germanic types, and then he was taken to a, what he describes in his notes as a Frank Lloyd Wright type city. He was taken into a labyrinth and down into elevators, and there he met an inter-council, a tribunal council of aliens, of little gray types, the translucent gray types. In getting into the Zeta Reptilian star cluster, we're talking about three or four different species, some benevolent, some non-benevolent.
So these are hybrid species?
Yes.
Are they crossed with Earth
crossed,
people?
Hybrid.
So we now have
alien the
Earth people?
They're probably more advanced in the chain of evolution in the universe. However, there was a Sasquatch at this council, the Hairy Yeti.
Yes.
They didn't have much to say, but they were present. They work on ESP.
I understand, they're telepathic.
Right, and a variety of other, he describes a dozen types of the Iargon, the sheep-faced man, was present. A dozen archetypal aliens at this inter-tribunal council. And then the Admiral describes in his book that the benevolent one at the head of the table spoke to him. Now, there's some theory that it was Adolf Hitler with a facelift. There's others who said that he's from Comobeniasis. My personal feeling is that he were from Comobeniasis, which is another distant star galaxy, who mm-hmm. are concerned about Earth's evolutionary process or the lack of. That's the people I had my visitation with were from Comobeniasis in 1957, and I had 8 hours of missing time. And I haven't been the same since, but
sure.
It crystallized a lot to me about the inner workings of the inner earth and the outer reaches of the universe, which, you know, like I said in my lecture, the more we know, the more we know.
It sounds like it gets very, very complicated.
Oh, it's very complicated.
And for people to comprehend this today, I'm sure it's very, very difficult to even grasp the idea.
Mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling, yeah.
But let's say it does all exist and this is happening, and we can certainly see very rapid and unusual leaps in our technology,
yes,
and you
yes,
have to, if
leaps,
you think about
yeah,
it,
right.
wonder how it happens and where it comes
right,
from. And
right.
I know a lot of people don't even question that, and they
right,
really
right.
should. We're
sure.
not...
Sure.
taught in schools to really think and to
right,
really
right, right.
question
right, right.
and become independent in,
right.
our, in our thinking and
yeah.
our perceptions.
That's a brilliant observation.
So, yeah. well, it comes from just being in contact with people who are in the science world, and mm-hmm. it certainly has encouraged
yes.
me to look further and start looking into other sciences.
Well, exactly. Like I mentioned earlier, some of the direct offshots we've seen is the Jump Jet, was one of the stars of the,
yes.
the recent Desert Storm caper that we pulled off, where a jet plane can come right up to an aircraft carrier and stall out and set itself down. You see?
That's pretty incredible. And you have to wonder just
where does
where
it all come
that
from? Yeah.
comes
yeah.
from.
Yeah.
And where is it leading? What is this leading up to? What is going to happen to these groups of aliens, or what is going to happen to the world's population? Because we're in an age of hopefully enlightened information mm-hmm. and new technology, where we live in such a global community where everybody really knows, or we are capable of knowing
yes.
what's going on anywhere in the world.
Well, a commercial on television recently answered all the things that you're saying, and people who do commercials are very clever people, because they've got their finger on the pulse of America's psyche.
Yes.
For instance, 1950, only 20% of the people in America believed in UFOs. By 1960, 40% of the people believed in them. By 1970, there were 67% of the people believed in UFOs. By 1980, there were almost 82% of the American people. This is Gallup poll.
How many of those do you think have actually had sightings?
I'd say maybe half of them.
That's quite a few.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. And the funny thing is that the military denies this officially, that they don't exist.
Still.
And it's to save themselves from being embarrassed.
But isn't there now a group in the government that is planning to eliminate these gray aliens?
Yes, ma'am, there are.
And that is the group called Excalibur.
Yes, ma'am, it's Excalibur Project, yes. That's a secret operation being put forth by the Majestic 12 and the White House to eradicate the what they consider the anthill complex problem. Based on, well, I have mixed feelings about this, Susan, because, like we said earlier, I've grown fond of them because of what they're giving us technologically, but their own survival in the meantime of mutilating the cattle, taking the tongues, taking all the parts that they make into their bobcat stew.
They don't have the best reputation amongst people who have studied them.
Right. They have kind of a bad rap. Mm-hmm. But see, that's only one segment of the gray population. They're the benevolent grays who are working underground on level 3 that I was on, that are feverishly building these very futuristic spacecraft that defy gravity as we know it. So while you have one level of grays operating for the good of mankind, you have the others out mutilating cattle, abducting Krista Tilden.
Which is a violation of free will, really,
That's where we drew the line, our military drew the line. I still have deep mixed emotions about it because all of our existence, we've gone out and looked up at the stars, you know, think, oh my God, you know, isn't this wonderful, the awesome, magnificent universe, you know? If there's someone up there, why don't you, you know? And they come here, and as soon as they come here, we put them in a cave situation, which they chose because they like the radioactivity.
They decided to live underground in these caves and these tunnels. I understand there's an extensive tunnel system exists under the earth.
That's also a military... supposed to be a military secret, but it's all coming out because it's an underground labyrinth that houses this group for the military's own purpose of control, as we said earlier, power, secrecy. But you see, it got to the point where it got out of hand. And I think the Hopi Indians, they're such magical people and they're such peaceful, loving people. They really blew the whistle.
They have many prophecies that relate to the extraterrestrials and really this time that we're living in right now with all of its technologic advancements and a lot of people that I guess are just really wondering what's going to happen. I know a lot of people that even at a very basic level of living who have lost jobs, sometimes well-paying jobs that they can't replace.
Yes, but here's a positive note about these little characters which I've grown fond of, especially Abba, who's in charge of the construction.
Abba is an extraterrestrial being?
Yes, he's a commander, and he's approximately 375 years old. They live to be approximately 500 years is their normal lifespan, because their chest and their lungs and their heart are all the same. Their diaphragms, they have a large diaphragm, chest, lung, heart. In other words, their lungs are their heart. And they have atrophy, which means basically for the layman they have no livers or spleen or all these other superfluous organs. They do ingest food. They don't have anal tracts, if you're interested in that, because their food that they take in actually becomes part of their body. So maybe that sounds foul on one hand, but it's part of the reason that they live to be 500 years. Now, people ask me a lot.
This extraterrestrial being yourself.
Yes. Yeah. They're kind of fluidy. They're kind of like people ask me, do they have blood, Dr. Bird? Do they have blood in them? They don't have blood. You have aloe vera. You're familiar with the aloe vera plant?
I have aloe vera plant.
Aloe vera plant. It's a very magical plant. I burned my hands before this conference severely here, third degree burns, And my wife, who's a nurse, put aloe vera on it. It was healed in like 24 hours.
It is a very magical plant.
So their blood line, if you want to look at it that way, is like aloe vera fluid. It's a fluid that they have in their system.
So they're really physically advanced beyond humans.
I would have to say that. You know, I'm not a biologist. I'm a trained ufologist. I say in my talks, I'm not a mystic. I'm not a medium. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a holistic healer. But I do know a hell of a lot about UFOs and aliens.
It certainly sounds like it.
Well, they're interesting creatures, and they were here. And the positive note I'm telling you is that many of them have been tunneled down into the Rio area, down in South America. Some of them have been taken over into the 29 Palms area and flown into the South America regions. Now, this is the latest information that we've gotten from my downlink, John Lear, who you're probably familiar with.
I am familiar.
He flies all over the world and is a very active UFO investigator at this time. And Wendell Stevens and the famous writer Brad Steiger, who's of course here at the conference, also conferred with me, and we did a group synthesis of the Excalibur project, and they say that it was an ill-fated project, the Excalibur project, in that they didn't eradicate all of the greys. Many of them got into the South American region, so that's what he calls the South American connection was one of
his. But the project is in existence right now.
It's an ongoing project.
It's ongoing.
A cleanup, because they're sealing off the caves and they're cleaning up the existence of them. So as certainly as they came, they went. And it's all basically history now.
It sounds like you've developed an affinity for them as living creatures.
Yeah, of course
and,
I have.
And a respect
them.
For
of
them.
Of course I have, yeah.
Which is a very interesting aspect,
yeah.
Because you've obviously contemplated them and been in contact with them much more than the average person.
Well, I think I'm privileged in that I was on level 3 and saw them operating on constructing ships and working with our humanoid people like partners, quietly working, efficiently working, going in and out of areas, pointing Commander Abba, especially in charge of the construction operations. Down in the 7 levels, they've got a monstrous character called the Lizard Man, Men group. I don't know if you're abreast of that problem.
It sounds like a whole other story.
It's another whole story. They're on the lower levels, and we don't even want to get into that because it's like a hellish dimensions, really, where they're procreating and doing bionics with humanoids, and it's a pretty grotesque.
Something a lot of people probably wouldn't even want to know
it's
about.
It's a hard thing to stomach and fathom, but it's actually going on as we speak, level 6 and 7 of people in cages being drugged beyond out of their minds.
That's gruesome, and that's when
the military had to. The military doesn't act frivolously. When they put that project Excalibur, and you know the Excalibur, you know the history of the Excalibur sword.
The Excalibur sword, yes, of course.
The one who pulled it out of the rock.
Sure.
Had control of the universe. So
the sword in the stone.
It was like a last-ditch effort of the government to maintain control of their own sanctity of our own planet. Because there was Bill Cooper, who's a colleague and a friend, and I like him, I love him.
I know Bill.
I was advocating once that the Greys had grown into a 500,000, maybe more, populace in these underground labyrinths. And they're still operating in the southern hemisphere. And there's still talk that they're going to take over the Earth. And I don't think they're going to take over. They'd be good partners to align ourselves with. Maybe we could get free rides to Zeta Reptilia, and learn how to live to be 500 years old instead of 80 or 90 if we're lucky.
They must have something there.
Well, they're advanced civilization, in my opinion. They dealt with Barney and Betty Hill back in 1955. They were the Greys.
Abductee case.
They injected her. They took cuticle samples, nostril hairs, clippings, skin. They actually took little pinches of skin out because they're as curious about us as we are about them.
Sure, we'd probably do the same thing if not worse.
Exactly.
If the situation
were
reversed.
So it's an awesome, humongous universe.
The implications of all of this are just incredible.
Staggering.
If if you were in the position to say one thing in particular to the people of this planet right now, what would it be?
That we're not alone in the universe. That we're sharing the universe with many, many, many people, archetypal aliens, if we want to call them that, that we have to expand our own consciousness. We have to shrug off our limitations and know that that there's people out there, or people coming here. There's a lot of traffic going on, and we just got to realize that we're not alone in the universe, and that it'll make us a bigger and better planet, for God's sake, and stop our killing each other, stop the warring, take the budgeting from wars into poverty areas on this planet, like in the Biafra areas. Our own homeless. There's a lot of homeless people in this country, and it burdens me, but that's one of the things I'd like to see, is helping us help each other, and therefore
becoming
a better planet and a better place to live.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Harley Bird.